In committee, and I apologize for the delay, but we got stuck on the House floor, and we are going to have to be pulled off here to vote in a few minutes. A couple of announcements. We will hold over House Bill 2818 because, 2018, the Community Right to Know program, because of the concession ran into our time here, so we're going to hold that over till Friday. And the same thing, actually, House Bill 3488 as well, which is already posted for Friday. So with that, I will open up a public hearing on House Bill 2859, open up a public hearing on House Bill 3543, and open up a public hearing on House Bill 3545. That way, when folks come up to testify, they can speak on any of those three bills. First, I'd like to invite Mike Greeny up and to walk through the bills briefly, and then I know Eric Sten is here, the city commissioner, and would like to say a few words. Eric, you have to leave, correct?
Yes.
So you want to kick us off for the...
Well, I suppose.
It's an honor to have you here today. We appreciate you coming. Again, apologize for the wait. It was out of our control.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and actually the honor is all mine. It's wonderful to be here, and I apologize for being scheduled in other places, but I want to testify in strong support of the entire package. I think that this is at the cutting edge of people will focus primarily on how these types of bills and getting the states into a leadership role on climate change is important and necessary for the planet, and it certainly is. I also believe, based on our work in Portland over the last 15 years, that this is critical to our economy, and that Portland had a climate change plan, a greenhouse gas emission reduction plan back since 1993. We were the first city in this country to have such a plan, and in that time period, we've actually reduced per capita emissions by about 11%. And I think what's significant about that, in addition to it being a very good thing to do, is that it actually shows that during a time where the city is developing, booming, our economy has been very good, we've actually made progress on it. And I think that when you study what's happened in Portland, what you find is that you go back to the 90s, perhaps people were not focused on global warming, but they were focused on how do we get a city that works better? How do we get public transportation? How do we do good land use planning? How do we invest in renewables? How do we do recycling and tree planting and other pieces that all come together? Now what's happened is that those efforts, I think, have made us one of the premier places that people look to, a place that people want to come and live. We have a lot of challenges still, not the least of which is that it's become almost unaffordable because it's so attractive. And in this world, as you look ahead, I think that we have to be a place that people want to live and that has a high quality of life that can then tie to the economy. What's happened now, a few years into it, is that we're beginning to see that one of our major economic strategies in Portland is actually trying to help our firms export, and it's the ultimate clean export, their brains and strategies on how to actually do infrastructure development in the big city. We have an architecture firm who's now opened up a wing in Sacramento, and they're selling nothing but green building techniques and strategies. We have 125 LEED certified buildings in Portland, which is the most in the world at this point, and our builders and developers are going other places to help work on those types of things. So I actually think that what you've got here is a basis that we can work with the whole state, following up on your leadership on biofuels on another subject, to build an economic strategy that also is doing the right thing. But I think it's really important to not just stress the environmental benefits, which are somewhat obvious if you look at what's happening with climate change in this world, but that this is a strategy that I think can actually build us some of the industry, some of the jobs, some of the infrastructure that we're missing right now in the state. So I want to give our full support, and we're ready to work with you and appreciate the leadership that this entire committee is showing. With you, Chair Dinkfelder.
Thank you, Commissioner Stanton. We appreciate the work of the City of Portland, and sometimes it takes your leadership in order to get the legislature to make some motion like with biofuels. So we certainly appreciate the work you've done as well, and certainly hope that we can work cooperatively as we move these bills forward. So,
well, thank you. I guess I would be remiss in also pointing out it is City Hall Day. I'm on the board of the League of Cities, and so
you weren't here just for us.
So you have hundreds of literally hundreds of mayors and city councilors from all over the state wandering the halls, and we've had a great reception. And I think one of the things that this ties into this testimony is that one, you may not always see in this building that Portland and all the cities throughout the state are working together much more closely than in the past, and I think this legislation gives that vehicle. We've got 71 mayors committed to walk in the Rose Parade in June with Mayor Potter, and so we're trying to set a very different tone, and if you can pass this legislation, you have our commitment. This won't be an urban-rural kind of approach. It'll be something where we're all working together like we are today, and so if you see these beautiful ribbons, that means this is part of the City Hall Day.
Great. Thank you. We'll look forward to visiting with you. Okay, Mr. Graney, if you could walk us through the different bills, that would be very helpful, and appreciate your willingness to do that.
Thanks, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Graney from Department of Energy and Rupert Dave Van Hoff from Governor's Office. And Dave wanted to make a few brief remarks first.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thanks for having us back. We both testified at the informational hearing on the climate change, and I'm not going to add much to the testimony from that time other than to note Mike's going to walk through the bills in a little bit more detail, but I just wanted to let you know on the integration bill, which is 3543, the committee has some minor amendments before it, one page of amendments. And in addition to that, the governor's office and stakeholders have been having conversations about further amendments that could get a broader a group of folks in support of the bill and comfortable with the bill. So we're hopeful that we'll have some proposed amendments to come forward Friday in addition to what you've got before you today.
Okay, great. And thank you. Mr. Rainey?
Okay. Madam Chair, the three bills in front of you deal with power plants. And when we had our meeting on global warming last week, we talked about the fact that power plants contribute about 40% of the CO2 from the state and vehicles, the other 40% for about 80% of the total CO2 in Oregon. So these three bills deal with power plants. There are recommendations from two task forces set up by the governor, one climate change integration group, and the other the carbon allocation task force. And I'd like to take these out of sequential order because I think it will make more sense in terms of the bills. The first one I'd like to address is House Bill 3543, and that's the one that's the recommendations from the Climate Change Integration Group. That's serving as an umbrella ongoing group to look at climate change issues generally, and as a successor to the original Governor's Advisory Committee on Global Warming. House Bill 3543 does three major things. First, it sets into statute the goals that the Governor's Advisory Committee on Global Warming recommended, namely to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions by the year 2020 by 10% below 1990 levels and by 75% below 1990 levels by the year 2050. Secondly, the bill establishes a global warming commission to oversee the state's efforts to meet those targets and undertake a number of other activities, make recommendations to the legislature for changes, monitor the state's progress, and undertake another number of other responsibilities. Finally, the other major provision in House Bill 3543 is it establishes amongst the Oregon University system a climate change research institute, and this would actually be participated in by Oregon State, University of Oregon, and other higher education campuses to do ongoing research and evaluation of the science dealing with climate change mitigation and adaptation measures. Could move on to the second bill, unless you'd like me to take questions, or I can come back after. I know
why
you have a lot of witnesses.
Why don't you come back after, right, because we have a lot of people, and we're going to try to get as many folks as we can.
Okay. Second bill, and these two bills, House Bill 2859 and 3545, come from the Carbon Allocation Task Force that was set up to specifically look at how to reduce power plant emissions of CO2. House Bill 2859, and what you have in front of you currently is a placeholder bill, but amendments have been drafted up to amend into the bill that would establish power plants' performance emission standards for greenhouse gases. And under that bill, Department of Energy would set standards for new baseload power plants, and it would apply both to power plants located in Oregon and power plants outside of Oregon that are used or acquired by utilities to serve Oregon loads. The standard is basically the equivalent of natural gas combined cycle combustion turbine power plants, which are the most efficient natural gas power plants operating today. This is an attempt to stabilize our CO2 emissions so that they do not continue to increase. As we talked last week, over the throughout the decade of the 1990s, our CO2 emissions were gradually increasing. The last year or two, we've seen a leveling out. We're not sure how much of that is actually due to mitigation measures and how much was a result of the recession in the economy. So we're not sure if we're really beginning to take the curve downward or we're going to see it plateau and go back up. So this bill is intended basically as a short-term fix to stabilize those emissions, at least from the power plant sector. And then the final bill, House Bill 3545, establishes what's called a cap-and-trade system. And under that, again, the Department of Energy would set CO2 emission limits for utilities statewide and for total emissions of CO2 from the power plant sector in the state, and with the target of eventually those emissions reducing to the target levels that are contained in House Bill 3543. Again, 10% below 1990 levels by the year 2020 and 75% below by 2050. So there's a process of gradually declining emissions. And the cap and trade allows utilities to, as with other pollutants, to trade upward or downward if they're not able through their own equipment and power plants to meet those targets. There's a series of procedures similar to what's before you on the renewable portfolio standard in terms of certificates and allowances and alternative payment paths, compliance paths for compliance, and the bill gets quite detailed in that regard. But that's the basic structure. So that's the long-term bill to meet the goals that are set in House Bill 3543, and that's how the three bills work together.
Thank you, Mr. Rainey. Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Mr. Greeney. Could you explain how do the standards, the emission standards in 2859 differ, so those are on the power plants, differ from the emissions caps in 3545? How do the, are we talking about apples and apples or apples and oranges?
Madam Chair, Representative Cannon, what's different is the first, the emission standards in 2059 is a stabilizing measure, so that our emissions don't increase. And particularly, what we're focusing on is new coal plants, whether in state or out of state. So coal emits substantially more carbon dioxide as well as other pollutants than natural gas. So the criteria established by House Bill 2859 would essentially keep the emissions levels from increasing. Then what the cap and trade measures do through additional mechanisms and through changes in targets, the procedure would be the same. We're setting targets, but then the targets ramp down to meet those long-term goals established in 2050. So the long-term goal of 2050, we back up from what's it take to be able to ramp down to get those targets and to achieve those.
Thanks.
Any other questions? Mr. Greenamba or Mr. Van Hoff, the state of Washington, as you're both well aware, just passed climate change bills. I think they're, not sure if they're actually adjourned up there, but I think they're done. They're always ahead of us in closing down. How do the proposals here compare to what Washington had just passed?
Madam Chair, I think in general they're similar and consistent. I do know that these track closely with what California passed last year. That we used the California statutes as a model. I'm not as familiar currently with what Washington has done. Dave may have more information on that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the Washington legislation really gets to two of the bills, the emissions performance bill and the bill that establishes goals, reduction goals. It doesn't develop a cap and trade program. As Mike mentioned, the California legislation that passed last year had both an emissions performance standard provision and a cap and trade provision in it. And just one follow-up I was going to add for Vice Chair Cannon is the emissions performance bill, one of the easiest ways I think of it is really looking at new, it might kind of already talked about this, but it applies to new resources. The cap and trade bill would apply to existing and new resources. It's the whole ball of wax, whereas the performance standard is really looking at trying to minimize emissions from new resources.
Right.
All right, thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Yes.
We have a whole host of people that would like to come up and testify, so I just want to remind people, because of the unfortunately short time, we're going to ask people to keep their comments to 3 minutes. We will take additional testimony on Friday, and hopefully we'll be able to have a little bit longer session on Friday as well, and we will go into Monday if need be. So with that, I'm going to call up, I don't know if all these folks are here, but Sarah Severn from Nike. Sarah here. John Thompson. Don Furman, and then Lisa Adada, if you could sort of be on deck. So unless you want to pull up a fourth chair, you're welcome to. Okay, and if you could state your name for the record, and we're going to be timing folks for 3 minutes. If you have written testimony, if you could hand it to our trustee assistant here, Ian, they will pass it out to the committee. Thank you for coming, and we apologize again for the delay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sarah Seven, and I'm Nike's Director of Corporate Responsibility Horizons and have responsibility for developing climate change policy at Nike. I also serve on the Governor's Climate Change Integration Group, which is expanding the work of the Global Warming Advisory Group in developing mitigation and adaptation strategies for Oregon. On behalf of Nike, I would like to thank you today for providing me the opportunity to testify before the committee. Nike shares the widely held view that climate change is a serious challenge requiring immediate and meaningful action by government, industry, consumers, and society as a whole. Climate change and reducing our climate footprint is not a new issue for Nike. It's something we've been focused on for over a decade. And during that time, we've been measuring our emissions and identifying and implementing a variety of programs to reduce our impact. Our strategy is broken down into two broad areas of focus, the first of which is most relevant for Oregon, which is our owned and operated facilities and business travel. In 2001, we joined the World Wildlife Fund Climate Savings Program and committed to reducing CO2 emissions from business travel and Nike owned and operated facilities to 13% below 1998 levels by the end of 2005. We actually achieved an 18% reduction in 4 years. In Oregon specifically, we've already undertaken significant steps to reduce our footprint. Energy efficiency projects at the Nike World headquarters and the purchasing of renewable power green tags. The Ken Griffey Jr. building at the World Headquarters is a LEED Gold existing building standard. And the World Headquarters was also recognized by the US EPA as a top workplace for commuters for alternative transportation. Examples outside of Nike include our European distribution center in Larkdal, Belgium, which installed 6 wind turbines, providing enough capacity to power 2 million square feet. Nike is the first company of its size to operate in Belgium to operate solely on green energy produced on site. And our Nike European headquarters also run off 100% renewable energy. The second area of focus is with our business partners, and is where the vast amount of our climate change impact comes from. These are often in emerging economies that may or may not be subject to national regulation. Reducing CO2 in those areas is therefore our largest challenge. But we are in the process right now of setting targets and identifying ways to further reduce our overall CO2 impact. I'm submitting for the record a letter from Nike CEO Mark Parker to congressional leaders calling for strong support and leadership in passing meaningful legislation on climate change. We encourage and support formalized efforts by business and government at state, federal, and global levels to set meaningful targets for emissions reduction and put in place policies and practices that enable those targets to be met. We encourage and support the primary objectives of House Bill 3543, including the science-based goals provided in the bill, the creation of a Global Warming Advisory Commission, and the establishment of a Climate Change Research Institute. Overall, we believe the best long-term approach is to ensure Oregon is part of a regional or national strategy. Again, thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. I think we're just going to keep going and just be forewarned that we are probably going to have to go take a recess here and vote, and then we'll be back. But I just want to keep going until we're actually called.
Great. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you. My name is John Thompson, for the record. I'm the Corporate Development Officer for ECOS Consulting. ECOS is a leading environmental advisory and service firm headquartered here in Portland, Oregon, with offices in Bellevue, San Francisco, and Durango, Colorado. We focus on the areas of energy efficiency policy and research, energy efficiency implementation, and sustainability advisory and implementation services. In particular, climate impact, risk assessment and advisory, GHG inventorying and modeling, as well as mitigation services. We at ECOS and I personally feel strongly that the state of Oregon should move quickly and proactively towards understanding how to manage the very real issues of global warming and to get in front of the economic opportunities that we're seeing outside of the United States created by a platform of legislation that has been passed. As a result, we are in support of House Bill 3543 and the two other bills that are being discussed today. Oregon has demonstrated national leadership in environmental activities, from the public benefits charge funding energy efficiency and renewable power development to efficiency codes and standards that are far more stringent than federal requirements, and having organizations like ours or Sequential Fuels, the Climate Trust, Earth Advantage, and other organizations headquartered here or located here, leading regional or national efforts to bring change in the way we impact our planet. We've shown leadership in the past. This leadership has created economic opportunities in the form of new business creation. Certainly our growth at ECOS, we've been around for 10 years and have seen our business in the efficiency world grow tremendously, and we anticipate the same growth in addressing climate change and GHG mitigation strategies. But this growth has come or has benefited new businesses. It has led to the ability to assist in attracting new business to the state. This leadership has put Oregon at the forefront of environmental stewardship within the nation, and yet there's a tremendous amount more that we can do. There are literally billions of dollars waiting from the outside of the United States to come in once there is a level, or once the ground rules with the game plan is understood from a legislative standpoint.
John, Mr. Furman, I apologize, actually, Mr. Thompson. Mm-hmm. We are going to have to go vote. We're going to just stand at ease, and then we'll come back, and you can finish up your testimony and continue. So there is a call to the House right now. We're just going to go up. And Mr. Thompson was in the middle of his testimony, and you have about 1 and 25 seconds left.
I'll conclude, but thank you. I guess from ECOS's perspective, we feel it is in our economic interest as a state, in our social and environmental interest as well, to join our fellow West Coast states who have already passed legislation and allow Oregon to show some significant leadership towards creating a positive impact for our environment, for our economy, and for our future. So we definitely support House Bill 3543 and the two other bills and ask that they move forward in the legislative process. Thank you.
Thank you, and we apologize for interrupting your testimony. Mr. Furman.
Madam Chairman and the committee, thank you very much. Appreciate being here and having the opportunity to talk to you. My name is Don Furman. I'm a senior vice president with PPM Energy in Portland. We are the second largest wind power producer in the United States. We're close behind Florida Power and Light, FPL Energy. We're headquartered in Oregon. Wall Street values that we are owned by another company, but Wall Street values this company, PPM Energy, somewhere between $4 and $6 billion, which would put us among the largest companies in Oregon if we were independently traded. We have been very active developing both wind power and also gas-fired thermal generation in Oregon. We developed the Klamath Falls project down in Klamath Falls, which is owned by the city, operated by us. We've also developed the Leaning Juniper and Klondike 1, 2, and 3 projects in Central Oregon, very active in Sherman and Gillum County. I'm formerly a senior vice president and executive at PacifiCorp. I was there for 12 years. PPM and PacifiCorp used to be affiliated. We no longer are. PacifiCorp's a utility serving six western states, the largest coal-fired generator west of the Mississippi. And I have 26 years of experience in the energy industry. I'm speaking today both on behalf of my company as a private citizen and also on behalf of E2, which I sort of think of as the business person's auxiliary to NRDC. I'm speaking in general support of the bill and in general support of climate legislation. And I often hear the business community is opposed to climate legislation, and I'm here to tell you that is not. And there are certainly elements in the business community that are, but they're just as true. There are large parts of the business community that fully support climate legislation for a number of reasons. First of all, the science of climate legislation is no longer debated in our boardrooms. It is accepted. You can usually find some yahoo out by the water cooler who wants to tell you what he heard on TV last night about, you know, why it's all crazy. But the science is accepted, and so also is the fact that we are going to be regulated at some time in the near future in terms of carbon regulation. And the discussion has really moved on to what are the opportunities? What are the opportunities both to assure that we as businesses who contribute to carbon emissions are minimizing our costs, but also, more importantly for a lot of us, where are the opportunities that this creates? People like to talk about these things as mandates. What they really are market opportunities, the opportunity for entrepreneurs and the people who amass capital to bring solutions to bear. And I can tell you from personal experience, there are hundreds of billions of dollars of capital being amassed and prepared to be invested in providing solutions to climate change. It is a massive opportunity. And as Commissioner Sten discussed earlier today, this is a massive opportunity for the state of Oregon. We are rich in renewable resources. The sun shines, the wind blows, and the rocks are hot in the west. And those things give us a lot of opportunity to provide different solutions other than simply burning carbon-based fuels. Aside from the opportunity, there are several reasons why now is the time to act. One is decisions are being made all the time in the energy industry, and I can tell you as a former utility executive, when you make a decision about a coal plant, you've made that decision for a long, long time. Coal plants tend to last 50 years, and right now many companies are looking at, do we retire a coal plant or do we extend its life? And a life extension can be 20 or 25 years. We'll be living with that decision for a long time. The second one is business abhors uncertainty. And most businesses, when you really talk to them, say, look, I can live with this. I can live with a form of regulation. I need to know, though, what it's going to look like. I can't make the investments needed to clean up my smokestack. I can't make the decision to build my next building with green standards unless I know that what I'm going to be held against. And the third thing is early movers, and specifically for the state of Oregon, early movers in this sort of a situation frequently benefit the most. There is low-hanging fruit out there, and the early mover is going to get the least cost solution, is going to get the most profitable solution. And I think if Oregon, this is a great opportunity for Oregon to take a leadership position in the area of climate change. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And Lisa, why don't you go ahead and have the mic pull over, and then we'll see if there's any questions.
All right. Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Lisa Adato, and I'm from the Oregon Business Association. And in the interest of time, I won't repeat some of the comments that have been made today, but I agree with them, and I would particularly would like to emphasize that sometimes the word gets out that the business community is against this kind of legislation, and I would agree that that's not the case. Our association has many members who are very supportive of moving forward with some sort of a climate legislation. The Oregon Business Association has played a leading role in vetting the business response to new climate change bills. We have hosted a conference that was well attended by the business community where we analyzed and looked at the bills. And we also have had meetings within our committee to determine our response to these bills. In addition to that, I served on the Climate Change Integration Group along with Sarah and many others. Our proposed recommendations, a key element is, again, as we've heard, this, or a key thing to keep in mind is we believe that climate change legislation will be upon us. As someone from our conference, one of our key speakers said, there's a train that's running down the track. We can either get, as Oregonians, we can either get in the engine and help drive that train, or we can stand in the way and have that train run us over. So we believe that this train is going, and we would like to participate in steering it. Here are some of the strategies that we think are key for Oregon to think about as we think about climate change legislation. One of them is, when should we act? And we'd like to emphasize along with others that sooner is a good idea, because as we wait, it becomes more costly to act. And we should act as soon as we feel that we've got the right solution for Oregon. Second, and this I think is critical for us to think about, is we need to secure a place at the table for Oregon. There's, and I'll discuss in a moment, there's a debate about national versus local versus regional. And there's some arguments to be said for either one of those approaches. But when we go national, Oregon can get lost. And in other, my former profession was in the healthcare industry, and in the healthcare industry, Oregon was way ahead of the curve in terms of efficiencies. And when the national program, Medicare, started paying based on a per capita or a per incident fee, Oregon actually was disadvantaged, because we were disadvantaged by our own efficiency. And we want to make sure that as we think of Oregon strategies, we're not similarly disadvantaged by the early efficiency moves that we've made. So we should think about how to put Oregon in the driver's seat and how to get Oregon solutions to be thought of as we look at this kind of legislation. So when we think about national versus state, we might ask you to think about solutions that do look at an Oregon solution that at least drives a 5-state or a 7-state regional solution, just to get us at the table so that we can influence the national situation. So think about that, because there are some compelling reasons to go national, but we want to make sure that we drive that national strategy, or that we're at the table. Another thing to think about is a utility focus versus a system-wide approach. As Mike Greaney said earlier, this is a very utility-focused approach. But we'd like, as we think about particularly the cap-and-trade approach that we're taking, to keep in mind that the utilities are 40% of carbon emissions, but there's other players, the transportation sector, manufacturers, and others that also play a part. And as we think about the solution, we want to create the right incentives so that we're not overburdening our utility sector, keeping in mind that the Northwest has thrived because of low utility rates. And if we overburden only one sector, we might harm our economy in that way. So just something to think about, how to involve all sectors of the economy.
Lisa, I'm going to have to ask you to wrap up.
I will.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Two other things, I guess I'd reiterate the business opportunities, and finally just a soft landing for Oregon. We don't want to be hit by enormous cost increases all of a sudden. That will hurt our economy. The legislation that we've looked at all session, I think, has offered an opportunity for Oregon to make incremental steps towards climate change legislation. We applaud that and would like to see that done. And finally, I'd just like to say we do support Senate Bill or House Bill 3543. We think that's a very good way to move forward to start codifying our laws and get involved in the necessary research and tracking that we must do here in Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you. And again, I apologize for the interruption of the panel. Are there any questions for this panel?
Quickly, Madam Chair, thank you. Lisa, has OBA taken a position on 2859 and 3545?
We are still vetting those, and we are, again, supportive of generally moving forward, but haven't yet taken a position specifically on those two, and think, in fact, that the integration piece that we're very much supportive of will help provide a roadmap so that we can continue that vetting process and move expeditiously towards the other pieces that we need to move on.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Jensen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't know, were you all here for the Secretary of State's presentation on none? Mm-hmm. Pretty gloom and doom, huh? Sort of thing. All the ice caps melting.
You saw the Al Gore movie.
Yeah.
It's similar.
Yeah. You know, the Antarctic. And I don't know, I was watching something on television a few weeks ago, and a poor group of penguins are going to become extinct because their hunk of the ice cap is going out to sea. As I heard some of this, I heard that in this pretty dismal forecast that Oregon was probably going to be the breadbasket that Southern California and California was going to burn up as we move through the next 20, 30 years. Is that not what we were hearing? So as we look at this whole arena, I'm wondering, can't help but wonder, if we're going to place, as you all have, from your testimony, your trust in the science on this and what the Al Gore movie, if that's who it was, it's a hard word for me to pronounce, but if we're going to put some trust in the science, if you're going to believe this stuff, I'm wondering if you're focused in the right direction. I wonder if you're planning for the Oregon that we're going to have in 2040. I'm not particularly. A lot of the folks in my part of the world are happy with the idea of some of the renewable things. Some of it see it as economic development, kind of goes on. So I'm not really anti as far as these things are concerned. But I wonder if we're too short sighted, Madam Chair.
Mr. Representative Jensen, I appreciate your comments, but in the interest of time, I'm not going to ask this panel to respond, and I have
many people in
the audience that are here and cannot come back another day. So I appreciate your comments, and thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. I am going to actually triage a little bit on the list because we have some people who are somewhat residents in this building, and I know they can come back, and we have others that can't. So I'm going to call up now some folks who I know cannot come back, and that would be Sister Pat Nagel, Rabbi Joey Wolf, and Gary Langenwalter. If you can come up, please. I appreciate it. And then I didn't see, I know we have somebody from Bend, and that's Sylvia Hayes. Sylvia in the audience here somewhere? Okay. Oh, there she is. Okay, we'll have her up next. Thank you again. Apologize for the wait and a little bit out of our control. Welcome. Thank you for bringing the world with you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Let me start first. Madam Chair, committee members, I'm Gary Langenwalter. I'm a pastor, a United Methodist pastor. I'm a businessman, and I'm chair of the Oregon Interfaith Global Warming Committee, which is coordinated by Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. Now, EMO has been working with the governor's task force for several years now, task forces to help work on these three pieces of legislation and others like them. And we support all three of them as a way to move forward. We've counted it an honor to be part of the process, one of the stakeholders. And we want Oregon to get back into leadership position on these issues. We've had it for a while, and it's been slipping. It's Oregon's turn to regain the leadership by passing the three. But more importantly, as people of faith, we're called to get involved in addressing the issue of global warming because it is an issue of social justice. Jesus called people the least, the poor, the children, those in ill health, the elderly. Those are the people who will be most affected as global warming wreaks its havoc on us. It also tears the fabric of God's marvelous creation, which is a divine gift that we're called to tend and protect for future generations. Because I'm a United Methodist, I can quote from our Book of Discipline, which is the bylaws of the 6 million-plus United Methodists worldwide, and it says, all creation is the Lord's, and we are responsible for the ways in which we use it and abuse it. Water, air, soil, minerals, etc., are to be valued and conserved because they are God's creation and not solely because they are useful to human beings. It goes on to say, we support and encourage social policies that serve to reduce and control the creation of industrial byproducts and waste. And for that, we could read greenhouse gases and global warming. I preach Sunday in my own congregation. This is not me as chair of EMO. This is me as pastor speaking about Earth Day. And virtually every person there is in favor of passage of these bills and reducing our impact on the earth as quickly as we can. The passage I chose was from the New Testament, Luke 11:11. Is there anyone among you who, if your child asked for a fish, would give a snake instead? Or if a child asked for an egg, would give a scorpion? I looked my congregation in the eye and said, brothers and sisters, we're killing our kids. We're giving them scorpions and snakes. We need to stop. And they heard me, and they agreed. So back into EMO chair mode. And as a pastor, we urge you to take moral leadership now as the session draws close and leave a strong legacy that we can be proud of because our children need this and your children need it and their children need it. When Oregon leads, and I know this as a business person, people in other states and other countries do listen. I'm going to Australia in 2 weeks, and one of the reasons they invited me is because I'm from Oregon. And Portland has this international reputation of being the mecca of sustainability, the place where leadership is happening. And this will benefit Oregon's economy. We'll be bringing tourists in and charging them to come see what we're doing and being the light to the world. By passing these bills, Oregon's economy will benefit, we will benefit, and Oregon will advance in spirit and its reputation as a place where the grandeur of the landscape is matched by the greatness of social order. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome.
Madam Chair and committee members,
My name is Rabbi Joseph Wolf, and I've been the rabbi at Havarah Shalom in Portland since 1987. I'm pleased to be asked to testify on behalf of my congregation in the Oregon Interfaith Global Warming Campaign. You can be assured that a broad spectrum of the faith community throughout Oregon is deeply concerned about the stewardship of our planet. Testifying before the rulers of Jerusalem over 25 centuries ago, the prophet Isaiah wrote, "Their land is full of silver and gold. There is no limit to their treasure. Their land is full of horses. There is no limit to their chariots. Their land is full of idols. They bow down to the work of their hands, to what their own fingers have wrought." To be sure, in Isaiah's day, people were not burning fossil fuels and overloading the atmosphere with carbon dioxide. However, this outspoken prophet was providing a lesson that is just as relevant today. Our technologies, be they chariots or coal-fired power plants, are in themselves neither good nor bad. And yet the homage we pay to them is the only way we know to prop up our denial about the damage that we are doing to ourselves and our children's chances of flourishing on this planet represents a travesty. Are we to forego our responsibilities to write laws that protect that which is most dear to us while fawning over the gods of convenience and business as usual? What we need in this hour is the determination to lead with our eyes open. And when we ignore the impacts that our works have wrought, when we turn a blind eye to the environmental consequences of our technologies, these products of our own invention amount to idols. The excuses for worshiping them become a cult of wishful thinking and inaction. If he were with us today, the prophet Isaiah could easily point to the dire consequences for our souls, our society, and the planet of worshiping at the wrong pedestal, just as he did 2.5 millennia ago. Oregon's faith leaders want to ensure that technology serves us rather than hinders us. Our technologies should support good health, shield the people in underprivileged nations from the disproportionate suffering from the consequences of global warming, and respect the generations to follow. This is why it is time for Oregon to embrace the policies contained in the three bills before you today. I urge you to join your counterparts in Washington State and California who've already adopted strong global warming legislation by passing these three bills. These three bills are good for Oregon. They help move our economy forward in a way that recognizes the carbon-constrained future that is coming to dominate the world economy. Global warming is a matter of deep moral and ethical concern to people of faith. Careful stewardship of the earth and its climate is among our highest callings. I urge you to pass these three bills into law. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Rabbi.
Can you hold the ear? I can hold the ear. I'm not quite sure how I got called up with this group, but I'm delighted to be part of it. I'm Sylvia Hayes with 3E Strategies, and 3E Strategies works in the areas of green building, sustainable energy, and sustainable economic development. And clearly the environmental impacts of rampant climate change are going to be devastating, but I hope that this group will really look at the economics of the issue as well. Climate change is already having negative economic impacts on Oregon. You have only to look at the collapse of the Southern Oregon salmon fishery to see real-life examples of this. And I can tell you that I have been in the Klamath Basin in rooms filled with, you know, Carhartt-wearing, John Deere, tractor cap-wearing farmers and fishers at the same time who are both really animatedly saying, can we do something about this issue because we're very concerned about our economic livelihood. Oregon is a snowpack-based system. That's where most of our river flow comes from, and we are seeing 30 to 40% reductions in our snowpack right now, and so there just simply is not going to be enough water for both fish and farms. And Mount Bachelor, I'm from Bend, as many of you know, Mount Bachelor has now had to purchase a snowmaking machine. They've never had to do that before. So we've also developed a dead zone off the Oregon coast that impacts fishes, but but more importantly impacts the crab populations. And crab has become one of our most significant revenue-generating fisheries in Oregon. So the economic damage caused by climate change is going to be impressive, but again, I think that there is a silver lining and a significant opportunity economically for us as well. And you've heard me speak a lot about Oregon's opportunity to be really economically well-positioned by becoming a leader in the clean energy industry. I think, as was mentioned earlier, if we can become a leader in this newly emerging carbon-limited economy, we're also going to be really well-positioned with that. We have 150 countries now with the Kyoto Global Warming Protocol that have signed on to a campaign to reduce their carbon emissions. And if Oregon companies can figure out how to make a better carbon-neutral mousetrap, whether that's a renewable energy system or a carbon-neutral desk, we will be in demand. I also think if we as a state can learn to function in a way that reduces our own carbon emissions, we're going to benefit from it economically. The first thing you do if you want to reduce your carbon footprint is you reduce your electricity consumption. Now, a couple of companies that have come out and done this, DuPont being one of them, they set out on a voluntary mission to reduce carbon emissions. They've done so by about 70% and surprisingly have saved a couple of billion dollars already just in reduced energy expenditures. Caterpillar Corporation has got the same kind of a story. So finally, I just want to stress that I think the time is absolutely right now to take bold action on these issues. 3E works statewide, but we're based in Bend. We're based in red territory. And I can tell you that 2 years ago, you couldn't even talk about climate change in much of central and eastern Oregon. And now it is, pun intended, a hot topic. And people are wanting to talk about it and hear about it. And in fact, both the cities of Bend and Redmond are moving down the path to signing on to the U.S. Mayor's Climate Protection Agreement. We're getting so much community uproar and motivation, largely driven by the faith community, that 3E has actually had to put together an action challenge campaign so that people can take concrete steps to reduce their carbon footprint. So the momentum is absolutely unprecedented. I think the time to move on this is now, and I think these three bills are an excellent starting point.
Thank you, Sylvia. Can you turn the mic towards you so we can hear you, and please state your name for the record.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Sister Patricia Nagel, and I am a sister servant of the Immaculate Heart of Mary, and I serve as co-chair of the Oregon Interfaith Power and Light. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. This is our home. It's the only home we have. Cherish it, protect it. It's the only one we have. At its core, global climate change is not about economic theory or political platforms. It is about the future of God's creation. It is about our human stewardship of God's creation and our responsibility to those who will come after us. Global climate is part of the planetary commons. Earth's atmosphere encompasses all peoples, all creatures, all habitats. The destruction of one life in any area affects all. Therefore, the response to global climate change must reflect our interdependence and common responsibility to the whole of life. Pursuing the common good excludes merely representing our own interests, industries, and agendas. It requires clear and open dialogue between all. In the concept of the common good, what benefits the community takes priority. I want you to know that the people of faith that we have worked with understand this and have willingly and generously placed their energies to create responses to this issue of climate change. Oregon Interfaith Power and Light is proud to serve as a facilitator to help these congregations respond. There are 22 similar programs in other states throughout our country. Last year, on a national level, the Interfaith Power and Light movement facilitated the screening of over 1,400 global warming films, 200 alone here in Oregon. In congregations across Oregon, 5,210 people saw an inconvenient truth and followed up with responses and dialogues on what do we do to respond. In 2006, Oregon Interfaith Power and Life assisted over 200 Oregon congregations through workshops, consultations on energy stewardship. This week alone, four energy stewardship workshops in Portland and LeGrand will train representatives of at least 50 Oregon congregations and over 80 households to improve their energy efficiency and otherwise reduce their carbon footprint. So I think you can see that there's a lot happening in communities of faith across Oregon. To keep a movement like this going, we need to access every single bit of creative energy available from all. We need the cooperation of individuals, businesses, corporations, congregations, and legislators like yourselves. This is not a time for timidity or partisanship. You are in a position to provide a sound framework for all of us to direct our efforts in addressing this moral issue. You can do this by remembering that the issue is the protection of our home, planet Earth. The issue is the common good of all who inhabit our home. There are three bills that you can pass that will provide a sound, courageous statement. It's in your hands.
There we go.
It's in your hands.
We can all share the responsibility of it. Going to make sure this
yeah, get down to the end.
Thank you very much.
You can give it back.
We'll throw you back the planet.
We'll throw it back to you.
Thank you.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Well, that woke us all up. Okay, I'm going to call up some other folks from out of town, and we'll go until 3 o'clock, and then we're going to ask folks to come back on Friday. We won't be able to hold over this afternoon. I have Pat Dudley, Heidi Logitz. I apologize if I'm not saying your name correctly, and then Craig Smith. And I'll probably have time to call up one more panel if we stick to the 3 minutes.
Madam Chair, just very quickly, you raised the agenda. Are we not going to be meeting today at 5 p.m.?
No. You can start, and your name for the record, please.
My name is Pat Dudley. I'm one of the owners of Bethel Heights Vineyard and also a member of the Oregon Wine Board. Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for your time today. I'm here on behalf of the wine industry, basically. Many of my colleagues urged me to come and on behalf of all of us say that from the point of view of the wine industry, which has become an important economic part of Oregon, we feel that this is a crisis we're in, and we feel it immediately. Already our wines are beginning to show the effects of climate change. We're the canary in the mine, really. The varieties that made the Willamette Valley world famous for wine quality, particularly Pinot Noir, is a cool climate variety. And it only grows really well in 4 places in the entire world. And the Willamette Valley happens to be one of those places. But we are seeing a shift in the growing season. In the last 10 decades, the wines have begun to change their character, and we're feeling it. They're higher sugars, they're higher alcohols, they're less finesse. We're learning to deal with it. We are trying to address the question of how we're going to cope with the change that's already upon us, and trying to plant in cooler places up the hill here and there. But the basic bottom line is if the trend continues, by the time my grandson is ready to take over this business, within my lifetime, we will not be growing Pinot Noir in the Willamette Valley anymore. And I think that even though our industry is particularly sensitive, our wines are particularly climate sensitive, it is the canary in the mine for agriculture in the Willamette Valley and probably in Oregon, that what we count on for success is a very marginal but just perfect climate for certain things. And We feel we're doing everything we possibly can on an individual basis in our industry. Every time there's a workshop on renewable energy, people jam the rooms. You'll begin to see solar arrays next to the vineyards. They're already starting to plant them out there next to the vineyards to try to become more energy conscious. But to do it on our own, obviously, isn't going to solve the problem. We need the state to take action in the incredible vacuum on the federal level. And if all the states take some action, we may be able to actually stop this train and start to turn the direction of this train so that we can maintain at least a moderate climate in our part of the world. So hope you will pass these three bills. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And I'm a big fan of Pinot Noir, especially from Oregon.
Good reason to support it, then.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Heidi Lagosche, and I represent Mount Hood Meadows Ski Resort. I'd like to thank the chairwoman and for allowing me to testify today on behalf of Mount Hood Meadows Ski Resort and as a citizen of Oregon. I'm here in support of House Bills 3543, 2859, and 3545. The recreation industry is not all fun and games. As stewards of the land upon which we serve the public's interests, we also have an obligation to protect the environment. Satisfying the public's desire for recreation while protecting Oregon's natural resources is a balancing act, to be sure. We are compelled to care for our mountain, our state, our planet, and to take action, precautionary and remedial. We in the ski industry have a very high confidence in our ability to effect positive change as a result of the passage of House Bills 3543, 2859, and 3545. If passed, a framework will be established for the present and future of Oregonians taking corrective measures in our efforts to curb global warming. During the 2004-2005 ski season, we not only suffered a later-than-usual season opening and closing, we closed three times during the season. The environmental impact of global warming has an economic impact as well. Our economic contributions to the labor force in the community are substantial and include countercyclical employment to the agriculture industry as well as to summer recreation and tourism. In Hood River County, Mount Hood Meadows represents the county's largest private employer. We believe that a viable, sustainable management system consists of the environment, the economy, and society. To ignore the importance of any one of these aspects is to deny the fact that they rely upon one another to achieve sustainable longevity. We advocate for the support of the committee as well as the passage of these bills. We're here to ask for your unanimous support of these bills as drafted. Please act to keep winter cool. It's short enough. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder. I'm Craig Smith, Vice President of the Northwest Food Processors Association, and I'm here representing Oregon food processing industry today. Thank you so much for the opportunity to address the committee on a topic that we believe is of utmost importance to the state of Oregon, global climate change. Food processors have a lot at stake as the potential effects of climate change are evaluated in the state. We are a leader in the production of high-quality, high-value food products in the nation and the world, and we do believe that we are at risk on this issue, and that's why we're here today. I'm going to really hit on three points today. I'm going to skip through my testimony a little bit to keep it short, but there's three things that we really think need to be looked at. I'm really here testifying on HB 3543. The first one is the adoption of statewide standards. We strongly support the adoption of statewide standards and believe that's the right approach. However, we do believe that especially the 2020 goal should be revised because both Washington and California have adopted 2020 standards that go to the 1990 level. Oregon's would be 10% below that and could feasibly put us at an economic disadvantage with our partners of the North and the South. We don't really see any reason for that 10%. We think the science holds that the 1990 levels by 2020 would be a very good goal, and it would be consistent with our neighboring states. So that is one of the issues. And I would like to point out that the other five states in the Western Regional Initiative that the governor has joined, two of those states, Arizona and New Mexico, chose the year 2000 as their baseline to take their reductions against, which really allows them to ignore about 10 years of explosive growth. So we don't want to put ourselves at an economic disadvantage. We do want to set statewide emission standards. So we strongly support that, would ask you to take a strong look at that 2020 goal. Second thing is the Global Warming Commission. We believe that that kind of a structure is absolutely necessary, but it should be done in the form of a task force or something that's more nimble. A commission in this case will spend most of its time and money feeding and caring for itself. We believe that the approach that's been taken in Washington, California is very, very good approach, that the governor already has in place here in Oregon several working groups that are working on this issue, and that the need for this commission, frankly, is not there. We do believe a high-level group is very necessary. We support that, but we do think that the commission itself is an unnecessary bureaucratic structure that will slow us down. And then thirdly, and this is probably the most important thing that I have to say today, is the issue of adaptation. It's one thing to talk about emission reductions, and those are really, really critical in this issue. But adaptation is the 800-pound gorilla in the room that no one wants to talk about. None of the states that I'm aware of have really adopted strong adaptation goals. And the issue here is that no matter what we do today, we are going to see the effects, as we've already heard today, of climate change on industries in Oregon, especially snowpack-dependent states like Oregon. If we don't have, as a part of our strategy, an adaptation component through the establishment of the working groups and other investments that we're going to make in the state, we will be sorely sorry as the future comes, because the solutions are very difficult, they're very expensive, and they're very long term. For instance, in our industry, water is just such a critical issue. How are we going to address the issue that we're so snowpack dependent? That is a reservoir that's up there that isn't going to exist anymore. How are we going to address that? How are we going to build more storage? How are we going to hold on to our water? It's the same issue for the municipals. It's the same issue for everybody in the state. And I do think that the legislation is missing that key piece, and that does need to be added, and we would ask you to consider amending the bill and adding requirements in the bill that would require adaptation to be a part of the plan as Oregon moves forward. Other than that, the rest of my testimony is fairly self-explanatory, and so I'll just end at that and really thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming here today, and I was very pleased to see that you made the trek, and I appreciate your comments. And again, apologize about the delay. Thank you. We have a couple other people that I just want to make sure and get them in. I'm not sure if they can come back. That is Dr. Andrew Harris. Dr. Andrew Harris here. And then also, I don't know, Mel Cohn. You guys, if I give you 2 minutes each, we'll be able to get you in. Is there anybody else who cannot come back on Friday? And we will be going late on Friday, so hopefully we'll get everybody in. Can you come up, please?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Committee. I'm Dr. Andy Harris. I'm a physician in Salem, and I'm not going to be here Friday, so I appreciate a chance to move ahead. I got a little taste of what it's like to be a politician this week because I wrote an editorial guest opinion for the Statesman Journal on global climate change and got a lot of hate email from it. I was called a fraud, a junk scientist, a communist, an alarmist, a number of things. I just want to discuss briefly what global warming is going to do from a medical perspective. What does this mean to the health risk for Oregonians? A warmer climate is going to mean more smog in urban areas and more smoke among from forest fires. It's going to increase the prevalence of asthma, chronic bronchitis, emphysema, and cardiac problems. Oregon already has a high level of pollen compared to the rest of the country, and global warming is going to heighten the production of allergens and increase the allergy season in both length and severity. A warmer climate is going to mean more severe storms, flooding, and contamination of drinking water by animal and human waste, potentially increasing Giardia, Salmonella, Cryptosporidium, and Cyclospora infections in our state. Heavy downpours and faster melting of the snowpack may lead to increased runoff and landslides, which is going to clog the sand filtration systems of cities like Salem. A warmer climate is going to increase the risk of mosquito-carried diseases such as malaria and dengue fever. A warmer climate means increased heat waves with heat exhaustion, heat stroke, and heat-related deaths, especially among poor people, the elderly, and sick. A reduced snowpack, as you've heard, is going to mean increased or less runoffs in rivers during the summer, that's not only going to threaten the salmon runs and diminish irrigation water, it's going to also increase the concentration of toxic pollutants in the rivers. For example, mercury, which affects all of our waterways, will become more concentrated in the water and in fish. Mercury is especially harmful to pregnant women because it crosses the placenta and can damage developing fetal nervous systems. So I would urge you all to consider support of all three of these bills. It's going to mitigate the health risks of Oregonians and is going to reduce expenditure of health care dollars in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. And for the record, please state your name.
Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Mel Cohn. I'm the state epidemiologist at the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to testify since I can't come back on Friday. Dr. Harris has already spoken to a lot of the public health threats that global warming is going to bring to our state, and I'm not going to go over those again. You have my written testimony. The one thing I'd like to add, however, is that one of the things that's difficult to predict about global warming's effect is exactly what kinds of health threats are going to come to the fore. Are there going to be There will be some areas with more mosquitoes and some areas with fewer mosquitoes because of changes in the climate. And so what we need to have in place in terms of adaptation, and I know Mr. Smith referred to this in his testimony, is a robust public health system that can detect these new problems and respond appropriately as they arise. So this is a very important public health threat. The department supports these bills, and I hope that you will support them too and support a robust public health system in our state. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Chairwoman, thank you for the opportunity as well, and thank you all for hanging in there and taking this a little bit into overtime for us, for folks who can't get back on Friday. We're probably at the point of the afternoon where everything's been said, but not everyone has said it, so I will endeavor to be brief. My name is Sean Clark. I'm the Director of Offset Programs with the Climate Trust. We are a nonprofit organization based in Portland, Oregon. I'm a bit of the odd man up here at the on the panel and speak a little bit to the business opportunities available through the pending legislation in front of the committee. The Climate Trust was established in 1998 in response to Oregon's groundbreaking CO2 standard for newly sited power plants requiring them to offset a portion of their global warming emissions. Since that time, the Climate Trust has become one of the leading nonprofit carbon purchasing organizations in the United States. We've invested about $9 million in carbon offset projects to date, the majority of that funding going to innovative carbon reduction projects and programs here in the state of Oregon. I encourage the committee to embrace the same creative policymaking that led to the creation of the Climate Trust and the establishment and established Oregon as an early mover in the carbon market. The oft-mentioned carbon-constrained economy is upon us. From the Climate Trust vantage point as a provider of carbon finance, we've witnessed an exponential increase in the level of private sector capital being directed at low-carbon technologies and businesses over the last 24 months. Oregon is an acknowledged and envied global leader in sustainable development. Due to our strong historical commitment to growing our economy while conserving our natural resource base, our technological know-how and manufacturing base for the very technologies and approaches needed to address climate change is one of the most advanced in the world. We have a strong asset base of successful businesses, proven government policies, innovative nonprofits, and research institutions, as witnessed by some of the organizations that have testified here today, and a well-developed culture of entrepreneurship. The global market for clean energy and smart energy, such as solar, wind, energy efficiency, and digital controls, etc., will be the boom industry of this century. Oregon has a world-class industry cluster in these technologies, and they create many more jobs than the fossil fuel industry that they eclipse. Oregon, by engaging in this asset base to help address the threat of climate change, poses our own economy can stimulate job-creating businesses that will constitute a competitive advantage as we export these clean, smart energy products to the rest of the world for decades to come. And the Climate Trust strongly supports the adoption of the entire package of climate measures before the committee. I think I beat my 2 minutes.
Great. Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming here today, and thanks for your testimony. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2859, on House Bill 2543, and House Bill 3545. Did I say 3543 and 3545? And I will close the House Energy and Environment Committee. Appreciate this. We come back on Friday, and we will have more time on Friday and be able to go a little bit later as we... Thank you.